From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's show. I'm your host, Nate Russell. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, we got a really exciting show for you today. This is somebody we've been trying to get on the show for a while, but she's been so darn busy with her new hit TV show, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Melinda Taub, writer extraordinaire, is on the show today. We're going to talk to her about her journey as a writer, and we're really excited about that conversation. A little bit of news for you from the UCB comedy ecosystem. A couple of things worth noting. Coming up in a couple of weeks, on April 28th, that week, Thank You Dell is going to be playing up at Hot Docs in Canada. So if you happen to be at the Hot Docs Film Festival, check out Thank You Dell, the story of the Del Close Marathon, which is going to be playing up there. And again, we're really excited about this film, and it's something that hopefully will be available to a much wider audience in the near future. But it's something that is playing at a few select film festivals coming up. That's one of them. So if you're going to be up at that festival, please check it out. This week, we also released a short film on our Vimeo channel called The Jane. Director Trevor Williams put that piece together. Features a lot of awesome talent from the UCB community and is a project that is a little bit outside of the box as far as like what we have been producing and distributing here at UCB Comedy. But it's that's what makes it exciting. It is a short film that has a comedic sensibility to it, but that also has a really great dramatic performances and filmmaking as well by longtime UCB beta and digital team member Trevor Williams, community member around here for a number of years. And we're really excited to present that film. So that's on Vimeo.com/UCB Comedy, where all of our short film content lives. So I hope you guys have a chance to check that out. All right, enough promotion. Also, if you haven't already, subscribe, review this podcast, please. We always beg for subscriptions at the and reviews at the end of this, but let's do it at the beginning today. How about that? Please give us a nice review or a horrible review, however you honestly feel about it. That feedback is welcome, and we are looking forward to engaging with you as a listener. And again, thanks for listening. Okay, now we're done with publicity. Let's talk about today's episode, which I'm really excited about. I enjoyed this conversation. Melinda Taub is a writer, and I said extraordinaire before, but it really is the best way to describe her. She's a prolific writer. She's been involved at UCB for a number of years, was on one of the original video production teams, then called Beta Teams, called Diamonds Wow, where she wrote a ton of sketches for the internet, and has been able to grow her career to write for such places as Funny or Die and McSweeney's. And she also wrote a novel a couple of years ago, and we talk about that. We also talk about her making the leap from working in the digital space to working in long-form television. About a year ago, she moved out to Los Angeles to be a story producer, which we all know what that means, right? A story producer on Adam Ruins Everything on True TV. Great show, really well put together, really funny, really well story produced. So we talked to her about that experience. And then after season one wrapped, she moved back to New York to work on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee and has been off to the races since then. So like I said, we tried to get her in here when she first moved back to New York to talk about how that show was going to like kick off and where she was at. But it was just too crazy. So we caught her on the 1 week when there wasn't a presidential debate for her to cover, to come in and talk to us. And it was really great to talk to her about that journey as a writer, as somebody who is pursuing writing in a really like determined, focused way. How do you go at it? How do you sort of put yourself in the space to write for digital, to write for, you know, for articles, for sketch, for novels, for long form television of varied styles? So we're talking to her about that process and her approach as a writer. So let's jump into it, our conversation with Melinda Taub.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back.
And now, are you in New York or in L.A. now? Like, what do you call home at this point?
New York.
New York.
Yeah, I moved across the country twice last year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and by the end of it, I sort of felt like I didn't live anywhere, really. I've basically been living out of two suitcases for almost a year now, and I'm so done with that.
When you moved to LA, was it like, I'm here now and I just need to get my life settled? Was it like that was a move for you, or was it always temporary when you went out there?
I didn't know. Because I didn't know if I was going to like it. I had almost spent no time in LA.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if the job was going to last.
Mm-hmm.
So I went just very much like, let's see. Let's see how this goes.
And did you like it?
I really liked LA.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot more than I expected to.
Do you miss it now?
Because
you've moved back now. This isn't temporary.
This is permanent again. This is for real. Yeah, I miss it kind of like I missed, like, Paris after I studied abroad in college. Like,
sure.
I was there.
That's a funny way to think about it. Semester abroad in Los Angeles.
That is really kind of what it feels like in retrospect.
Uh-huh.
Because I did decide toward the end of my time there that I was going to stay.
Yeah.
But, like, a month after I decided, this is it. I live in L.A. now. I'm going to get a car. I'm going to get a real apartment. I got a job back here.
Oh, my God.
So it really, most of the time I was there, I didn't know if it was going to be permanent or not. And then all of a sudden I was like, surprise, it's not.
So you were there without a car? You didn't have a car, or you just rented a car or something?
Yeah. I didn't have a car for most of the time I was there.
Oh, my God. So you just Uber everywhere?
I did Uber everywhere, and I walked to work most days because I lived in West Hollywood, which is near where the College Humor complex is.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah, walking in LA makes you feel like an alien.
Yeah, like
Los Angeles does not want you to do that.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Well, welcome back then.
Thank you.
We missed you.
It's good to be back in the city.
So, I mean, you and I go back to what, like, I think we met right when these, like, beta teams at UCB formed, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't know each other before that.
No. I hadn't done anything at UCB before that.
And we were on the rival initial beta
team. Oh, yes.
Right? Quite a rivalry.
I think you guys kicked our asses.
Well,
in terms of, you know, views and critical acclaim.
Critical acclaim, yeah. By critics, you mean commenters on UCBcomedy.com.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But wow, it's been quite a sort of like path for you. You got a lot of stuff going on now, right? You're working on Sam B. Congratulations on the pickup for the rest of the year, right?
Thanks, yeah.
That's awesome. And you've got a pilot that's being produced, right?
It is a pilot that is based on my novel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really, I wouldn't say it's my pilot, but it is.
A pilot based on it. So you're not directly involved in that process. It's more like.
Yeah, I'm a consultant. I have a contract to be a consultant on the show.
How wild is that?
It's so weird. It's very exciting. I think it's a story that could make a good TV show,
yeah.
And the people who are making it seem like exactly like my dream team of people to make it.
Awesome.
It's being produced by Shondaland, Shonda Rhimes's production company, produced through them, and I think they're really great at telling like epic stories, so I'm very hopeful.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And is it, as a consultant, is it like how involved have you been? Is it like they're just sort of like, oh, is this the intention behind this part? Like, what are they checking in with you about?
So I think it's sort of not super clear how involved I'm gonna be.
Uh-huh.
I think I probably like shouldn't get into this too much.
Yeah, no.
But like, at least at these early stages, they're based in LA. I'm based here. I have another job.
Yeah.
So I'm not pushing for a whole lot of involvement.
Sure.
I'm just excited that it's happening.
Yeah, well, it's really great. It must be a crazy, like, I mean, you're probably just at the beginning of it now, but I imagine that's a wild experience to be like something that you, you know, birthed and created and then have it sort of like have a separate group of people and a company and an apparatus be like, now we're going to adapt this thing. That's such a cool thing.
Yeah. It's like kind of it's a weird feeling, but also not that different from writing TV generally. Like,
uh-huh.
I remember having sort of the same feeling when I was writing last summer on Adam Ruins Everything. And I wrote a scene set in a sewer with a bunch of like sewer mutants who sing a little song.
Yeah.
And I just wrote that dumb scene. And then, a few weeks later, the production people start coming in, and I walk past a production meeting of, like, more than a dozen people talking about building this sewer and building the puppets. And it's Yeah, it's always amazing to see, like, other people build the things that you wrote.
Yeah, that's so cool. So that's where you're at now. Let's talk about how you got here.
Sure.
When was the point that you... When was the point for you that you became a writer? Like, it was... Did you have day jobs and that you were writing on the side? Or when was the point you became a writer, like, I'm a writer now?
Interesting question.
Like, that's my job.
Yeah. So, like, when I first moved to New York, my first job was I worked at a hedge fund for a few years. And I didn't totally know what I wanted to do. I sort of wanted to do something artsy. I, you know, thought maybe I wanted to be an actor, but, like, very quickly I didn't like the process of doing that.
Sure.
And so it was a few years of, like, mostly just working at a hedge fund and getting more frustrated, and I belonged to a writing group, and I realized that was what I wanted to do. And so I, like, quit the hedge fund job and just, like, wrote on my own for a while.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to get to a point where that was a living.
Yeah. And what year, when was that about that you quit
job? I think that was, like, 2008.
Okay.
And then, like, I had a year where I was, like, doing various things. I had some savings from the hedge fund job.
Sure.
So
that helps.
Yeah.
That definitely helps.
It was a year of, like, honestly, a lot of reading on my couch, which was kind of great.
But still, that's investment in yourself, right? Especially for a writer. Like, that's a valuable experience, no?
Yeah, let's go with that.
You have regret around that?
I don't have regret around it. I honestly don't think about it that much. Like, it was definitely, like, the laziest I've ever been.
Sure.
And, like, I probably could have accomplished more in that year, but I did also, yeah, I read a lot. I watched a lot of comedy, like, both of which are things that have served me well.
And yeah.
Things that I wish I had more time to do now.
Right. And you said you were in a writing group. Was that, like, novel type stuff, short story stuff, screenwriting? Like, you've been sort of...
It was a very loose group that people could write whatever they wanted. It met once a week in different places around the city.
Yeah.
And people could come if they wanted or not come if they wanted. And everybody wrote silently for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, whoever wanted to could sign up to read for 5 minutes whatever they wanted.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was not like a terribly, like, it wasn't like a... rigorous feedback group.
Sure.
It was just to
motivate yourself to do it.
Yeah, and it was great for that. It really, like, made me think of myself as a writer.
Yeah.
Just having that built in every week.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm asking because, like, so much of like what seems like a skill set necessary to be a successful writer in television is to be in a room. So I wasn't sure if it was like that was writer's room experience, but that was a little bit more like,
oh no, yeah,
just a motivator.
I think my writer's room experience came from UCB.
Yeah,
that's where I developed that skill, from, like, being on teams and being able to, like, riff with people, and, like, teaching really helped. Teaching sketch classes, because I had to demonstrate to them how to, like, supportively, help someone else's sketch, and how to, like, contribute a joke that's on the game for someone else's sketch.
Even if you don't care for it.
Yeah, even if you don't care for it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I didn't care for it, I would tell them that as well.
Sure.
But...
even if it's not in your voice.
Even if it's not in your voice, yes.
That's a nice way to say
it. You have to be able to pitch jokes that are not, like, the opposite of the sketch.
Yeah.
And that really helps with that, too.
And the first team you were on was the video team?
Yes, okay. Diamonds Wow.
And then Maud a couple years after that.
Mm-hmm. I was on Diamonds Wow and then one more video team. I was on Diamonds Wow and then another video team. And same time that I got on that one, I got on Maud.
Mm-hmm.
So I did them simultaneously for just a little while. But I couldn't really do them both because I was also writing my book at the time.
Right.
So I quit beta a few months in.
And so you, so 2008, then, and that stuff didn't happen in 2010. So at that point, you were already outside of, like, you're doing that stuff, you're doing, like, beta stuff for you know, for free for your own professional development.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working outside of that as a writer, you're picking up other jobs that way, or were there other sort of odd jobs that came through at that time?
There were some odd jobs. I was and a personal assistant for a while, for a few different people. And I started getting part-time writing gigs around the time that I started doing beta, or maybe a little bit before. Mm-hmm. I wrote for a blog for, I think, more than a year, almost entirely about the television show Gossip Girl. Every day I would write 3 or 4 posts about Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
It was a really good gig.
Yeah.
It was a pain because I had to stay in on Monday nights and watch Gossip Girl.
There's worse things in the world. Okay, so that I guess I'm just asking because it's that hustle of what is the hustle when you're getting that writer's room experience at night, you're picking up other stuff during the day that's writing jobs. What's the sort of mentality that's what are you going for at that time when it's you're working, but it's not necessarily the job yet?
Mm-hmm.
What's your mentality with the projects that you're taking on, and what are you trying to walk away from stuff with? What are you building? Uh-huh. Pack it?
Interesting. I don't know. At that early stage, I don't know if I knew. I knew I wanted to be a writer. Writing TV comedy was sort of the big dream.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted to write everything,
mm-hmm.
and I figured I would take any job that had any kind of writing involved in it.
Sure.
Which I not being precious about that, I think really helped me. I make fun of the Gossip Girl job a little bit, but it actually the discipline of having to get up and write something every single day and not having time to worry too much about like trying to write something tight and amusing and fun, but not having time to be precious about it. Mm-hmm. I think that was also really useful. I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I knew that having worked at the hedge fund where I had a great time, I felt like that had kind of distracted me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured I would take any job that was, however tangentially, one more step closer to the stuff that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So even writing jobs that were kind of silly, I was at least it's experience. If I keep doing it, it'll get me closer.
It aggregates.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much of a thought of this piece. I mean, I guess you answered it. I guess I'm just thinking even if your mindset's not there, looking back, I guess maybe looking back, what are the writing things that you did that you felt helped you get more work? Are there pieces that sort of stick out to you that I wrote that and that was influential in getting me another gig or?
Yeah. A few of my beta videos really helped.
Yeah.
One of the first ones I did was called, I forget what it was called, but it was the premise was the owner of an animal porn company promising his customers that there's no gay stuff in his videos.
Okay.
And
classic game.
Yeah, it was a very simple, clear game. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good writing sample.
Uh-huh.
So when I was applying for stuff, I would send them links to videos like that.
Yeah.
I had a blog for a while. That was just melindataub.com, and I would write short McSweeney's style humor pieces.
Mm-hmm.
They were McSweeney's style because I sent them all to McSweeney's and they rejected them. and then I would put them on my personal blog.
Yeah.
And one or two of those got some traction.
Yeah.
The website doesn't exist anymore, but it was something. There was one about it seems so hacky in retrospect. It was God tweeting creation. In 2010, it was groundbreaking.
Sure, we were all Twitter was hot, right?
I barely knew what Twitter was.
Yeah.
I had to go to Twitter and find out to write that. Yeah.
Yeah.
and that it ended up getting picked up some places and actually got a lot of traffic. And so I would put that in my emails applying for jobs.
Yeah.
Usually I would exaggerate how much traffic it had gotten.
Sure.
Because they didn't know.
No.
Yeah, so I had that and a few links to beta videos that I would send out as here are things that I have done that have done well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all just my tightest, funniest stuff that I figured would be crowd-pleasing.
Sure.
Employers, and it usually worked pretty well.
Cool. What type of stuff, how did the book come about?
I... had the idea for it. It's a young adult novel. It follows some of the characters from Romeo and Juliet after the events of the play and what happens to them, the ones who don't die in the play. So I had the idea for that, and I started writing it. And then I have a friend who's a writer, and he was a novelist, and he had a novel coming out. And I was telling him about the book idea that I had, and he was really into it, so he put me in touch with his agent. And she also thought that she could sell it. So I wrote like the first chunk of the book, probably like the first third, and sent it to her. And she basically agreed to represent me. So I wrote the rest of it.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And is it, what is the sort of experience of having a book get published? Like, what was that like for you in terms of, Did you do stuff that was like to support the release? Did you go to bookstore? Was it like bookstores, like events, or what did you do around the release of it?
I did a little bit. I did some blog interviews, mm-hmm. and readings at bookstores and libraries around the city. Yeah.
Okay.
Not a like ton of stuff, but. Some stuff around New York City.
Do you feel like that's a path for you still? Are you writing novels still? Is that like something you're interested in, or is that like something that you did and now you're like, okay, I did that?
I would love to write another one.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. Like, I took time off from everything to do it. It was over the course of like a couple years that I wrote it,
uh-huh.
and I wrote the bulk of the first draft when I took a few weeks off from my day jobs.
Yeah.
And I think I took a month off of beta, and I basically just went to the lobby of the Ace Hotel every day.
Wow.
And sat there. And I didn't have any money, but to sit there, I felt like I had to buy a coffee. And then to justify what I was spending on that expensive-ass coffee, I felt like I had to get some writing done. So it motivated me to actually plow through it.
Wow, that is a psychologically complex little trick you have to play on yourself.
I have to... Yeah, really, like, play complex tricks to get myself to get anything done.
That's cool. That's a really interesting approach. I can respect that. Anything to stop procrastinating.
Mm-hmm.
Was, as far as, like, so I guess, like, take me through what the sort of, like, build-up was then to booking Adam Ruins Everything, that job. So is it that, like, is that, because you're also doing, like, stuff like, so you had a couple things at McSweeney's that got picked up that did really well.
Mm-hmm. Just one at McSweeney's.
Just one.
Yeah, I think.
And that one's really funny.
Oh, thank you.
So you have that, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing stuff for Funny or Die and Split mm-hmm. Cider and The Onion. You're contributing to all those things?
I was a contributor, not at the same time. I was a contributor to The Onion.
A different day.
Yeah, over, like, a summer.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, submitting headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was contributing to the Onion News Network, and then it got picked up as a TV show, so then I wasn't working on that anymore.
Yeah.
And I contributed one thing to Split Cider.
Yeah.
So
you're picking off these little things, uh-huh. little things that are like little things to sustain or to just get another credit or to sort of like build more of your resume.
Yeah, I think I...
Correct me if I'm wrong. If that's not your mindset, then...
I think you're giving me credit for putting more thought into it than I did.
But even just in retrospect.
Yeah, I think that I just sort of, like, went after anything that, was another credit or, like, was anything closer to, like, getting paid to do it. The Split Cider thing was not a, like, comedy piece. It was about my mother.
Yeah.
How she kind of once was a comedy writer before me, which was something that, like, hadn't occurred to me until recently, that I thought was kind of cool. And, like, Split Cider is really the only, like, meta-comedy outlet, or was at the time, for something like that. And it was close to Mother's Day, so I sent it to them. And then Funny or Die was... they wanted to do more like topical comedy stuff, and so they were kind of staffing up for that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Nate Dern was running it, and I just got like an email with like a call for mm-hmm. packets. They wanted, they just wanted like some samples of the kind of like prose writing that they were doing. So I wrote a bunch of stuff for that.
I guess the reason why I'm like walking down this road is that one, it always felt like, you know, as being somebody who we never really worked on anything together in a super direct way, right? Maybe like that.
Maybe like corporate gigs?
Yeah, corporate thing. Yeah. But nothing like, not even in the sort of like beta world. We were always on different teams in the beta world. But you were always incredibly prolific there, writing a lot, doing a lot of stuff, putting yourself in a position, and all these credits, whether they're extensive or not, are putting yourself in the position where you're working, doing, contributing, build like little chit by chit, right? Little things.
Yeah.
And it always felt that way. It always felt like there was always something new that you were doing.
I definitely always tried to do stuff. I think it helps to be pretty jealous and competitive.
Huh. Yeah?
When other people are doing stuff, I also want to do stuff. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Like when I saw friends of mine have stuff on Splitsider, I was like, oh, that seems like a really cool thing. I love Splitsider.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently they'll like take submissions. I'm going to do that.
Yeah. I can dig that. Is that what motivates you?
Jealousy? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. I wouldn't say it's what motivates me, but I think sometimes it keeps me from getting lazy.
Sure. So when you were on your couch for that year, that's what you were lacking, was a peer group to sort of like
you going. I think that's one of the best things about UCB is that it makes it feel normal to be surrounded by incredibly talented, hardworking people.
Yeah.
And you feel weird if you're not doing that.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. And sometimes it feels good, and sometimes it feels bad.
Yeah. Oh, sometimes it feels terrible.
Yeah. But overall, net good and a motivator. That's a good reminder. I feel like I'm in a cycle right now where I'm like feeling that sort of like the wheels are moving slowly on everything. So that's a good reminder that like there's a positive side to that competitiveness too.
I think so.
I need to get back in that mindset.
Yeah. I think it like, it can be kind of toxic, but it also, I do think that it can kind of make people productive in a way.
Yeah. So then what was that path then for you looking back on it that booked you that job? Because that was your first TV writing job.
Yes. So
and even then, were you a producer technically, right?
Yeah. What was it?
The technicalities.
Story producer. Yes. We were story producers.
So to get that story producer job, what do you feel like was?
I've always wanted to produce stories. So they sent out, which was very nice and rarely happens. They sent out a call for packets to I think all the writers at UCB, and I was working at Funny or Die. I loved it at Funny or Die, and they didn't give a lot of time to submit the packet, so I was not positive I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of asked around a little, and people were like, yeah, Adam Conover's great. So I like just went home one night after work and just wrote it, just like wrote until like 1 in the morning, and kind of polished it up the next day. Might have polished it at work. Then sent it off. They basically wanted, I think, some pitches for stories and a sample act, like a sample act of an episode.
Yep.
And I wrote one about a topic that we did end up doing about how I don't think unpaid internships are a great idea. And I sent that off. I don't remember if they had a second round of packets. I think they didn't. I think I sent it off, and then like a week or two later, I had an interview with Adam and some of the producers.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, I think they asked for like more pitches from me. And my sister's a journalist, so I think I just told them a bunch of things that I knew about because she had written about them, tricked them into thinking I was smarter than I was. Totally worked. Then I got offered the job the next day or so.
That's awesome.
Everything moved really fast after that. I got offered the job, and I think we started working like 2 weeks after that.
Yeah.
So I had to go home and basically get rid of everything I owned and then get on a plane.
And get on a plane and go.
Yeah.
And that was the start of your suitcase adventure that you're still on.
That I'm still on. I'm so sick of those fucking suitcases. Can I swear on this? Probably I can.
Oh, hell yeah.
That would be crazy.
This is a PG.
This is a family friendly comedy theater.
Come on, Melinda. That's so rad. Did you know Adam before that or not?
No, we had never met.
Oh, wow.
I don't think so. We might have, like, passed each other in the teacher's lounge because
sure.
we were teaching sketch at the same time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we didn't really know each other.
That's rad. So what is that experience like then to be, like, you got this gig, it's your first big gig, it's 3,000 miles away, you're uprooting? That must have been a tumultuous, like, little couple of weeks there.
It was incredibly tumultuous. But, like, everything about it was so tumultuous that it was, like, it felt too big to get worried about. It was almost like a fight or flight sort of a thing. I just had to get through it.
Yeah.
So I just, like, and luckily, the great thing about going to L.A. from New York is even if it is, like, a really, like, last-minute move like that, I kind of went thinking, like, oh, this is going to be terrifying. Like, I don't know anybody. And, of course, I knew a ton of people.
Right.
Because, like, everybody
moves
goes
out
to L.A. for, yeah. you know, at least some period of time.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, it's an incredibly, like, welcoming community.
Yeah.
The, like, New York expats out there.
Sure. And yeah. I also imagine that, like, in a way, that move is also probably helpful when it comes to the first job. Like, because you're also, like, you probably want it to do, like, any job. You want to do a good job. But it's, like, in that circumstance, too, you're, like, Let me, like, there's less distraction because it's not your normal life. You moved for it. So,
yeah.
like, even if you don't know a lot of people, so what? That means you're busting your ass at this job that you've wanted, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was easier, I think, to focus on it.
Yeah.
And everyone was busting their ass because it was everybody's first TV show,
thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And so everyone was, like, really on board. Nobody was phoning it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great, great job.
And it shows in the end product. I mean, that show is so tight. It's
well,
like,
thank you. Yeah.
In every aspect, it's really tight.
I really love the show.
Yeah.
I would be a fan of it even if I hadn't written on it.
And what was the experience for you, I guess, like, so comparatively, right? Comparative to the video stuff that you're doing prior to that, the film stuff. Which is mostly short form.
Mostly, yeah.
Mostly low budget, no budget.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
$0 across the board, I think.
Negative money going into the red.
UCB never gave us any money.
No. but so you, and now you're going out there and you're working on a show. How did you find the sort of experience of, I guess, like, yeah, what were your duties beyond, like, as a story producer? How did you find that experience in comparison? I imagine you liked it.
Oh, yeah, I liked it a lot. I like writing narrative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different muscle. I mean, it was kind of honestly halfway between writing a sketch and writing a novel.
Yeah.
Because it's much less story than a novel, but it's enough story that you have to keep it all in your head. I mean, each episode was pretty self-contained, and they're only 22 minutes, but
uh-huh.
we still tried to, like, have a coherent, like, character arc
sure.
for our guest characters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I really liked writing longer stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, half-hour comedy is something I'd always wanted to do, so that was great.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's sort of a fact-based show, and I like writing comedy that's based on real stuff as well. So I was really into that.
How much on that show? a lot of times, as a writer on an episode, right? You're there on set, you're sort of covering set, and you're also, like, looking for ways to, like, you know, just, like, maybe improve the comedy, you know, like, tighten things up. Like, you're sort of, like, have an eye for that on set. With that type of show where it's, like, in an unscripted space, what's that contribution like for a story producer on an episode? You know what I mean? Like, is it still the same thing? Or because it's so tight that it seems like it would be hard to get to set and not have it be right there on the page.
I mean, it was right there on the page. It was
all
written down.
Yeah.
It was not – there was not a lot of, like, improvising on set or anything. The structure of the show would have made that really difficult because we had to research it really heavily.
Yeah.
And if they had just been trying to, like, improvise facts from the 1880s, like, those would have just been lies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, we researched it really heavily before, and then we wrote the scripts. And on set, the changes that we made, there was usually a writer on set because often Adam would want to, like, change the wording of something. And he would want to, like, check in with the writer who wrote the script to be like, does this change the factual information that we're trying to convey?
Yeah.
And we were also there for, like, punch-ups and stuff as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Dig it. And that, so that job was, like, four or five months?
Let's see.
About that long?
May, June, July, August. It was about 4 months full-time, and then I think when they hired the writers, our contracts went through, like, maybe mid-September.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but they were still shooting the show at that point.
Yeah.
And when they hired us, they hadn't realized that they would want a writer on set.
Yeah.
So we were done full-time at that point, but they would have us come back to be on set.
To do a little more.
Yeah.
So, and how quickly after that point did you book the job at Full Frontal?
I mean, I think I had my last day on set for Adam Ruins Everything a week in, like, late September, early October.
Uh-huh.
And then I got the job at Full Frontal, like, a week later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really fast.
I had been, like, applying for stuff because we mm-hmm. didn't know if we were coming back on Adam Ruins Everything. So I was like, well, I gotta keep looking for other stuff.
Yeah.
And I was also working at College Humor for a little while. And yeah, so the timing worked out pretty
really
well.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the part that I was curious about because and that's a very fast sort of like transition. That's good timing.
Mm-hmm.
For you, what was that process like of being on a show? You're out there, you're story producer, mm-hmm. right? So it's not, it's not a writing job in those quotes. That's not the credit that you're receiving.
Yeah.
And clearly that's the goal for you. And also is when it has that opportunity, there's other benefits that come along with that. So, like, you're pushing towards that. So what was the thought process or what was the process like for you of finding that second job? Do you have a team at this point or?
I do now.
You do now.
Yeah.
When did that come into the picture?
So after I already had, like, a book agent
yes.
and, like, representation for that stuff. And then I tried a little bit to get an agent when I was story producing on Adam Ruins Everything.
Yeah.
But it didn't really go anywhere. I think because it wasn't, like, a full-fledged writer, like, staff writer position.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was, like, looking for work after that, I was talking to one of my friends who had representation, and he was like, yeah, I'll send you the calls for packets that I get from my guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I submitted for some of those and made it through the Full Frontal process. And then when they offered me the job, then I reached out again to, like, the reps of Friends,
yep.
being like, I got a job now.
Yeah.
Also, my book's going to be a TV show.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to come and talk to me?
Yeah.
And they were like, yes.
Well, that's good. Leveraging that moment. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's what the process was like. You're sort of in this position where you're like, I made this leap. I'm in this half hour space. It's like a great credit, a great experience, like something to walk away with that's great. And mm-hmm. it's like, what's the next thing? And it's very much like the ground is still shaky.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, I loved working on Adam Ruins Everything.
Yeah.
It was one of the, like, greatest work experiences of my life. I had such a great time. But just by the nature of it being, like, kind of a small production, they couldn't make us any promises at the end of the first season about,
sure.
like, whether the show was coming back or whether we were coming back.
Yeah.
And so, like, I felt like, and we all kind of felt like we had no choice but to treat it as, like, we're unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And to proceed accordingly.
Yeah. And it works out.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And so now you've been at that job and you guys have been how many episodes in at this point?
Oh, I've lost track. I think coming up we've got maybe episode 9.
Nice.
On Monday. Yeah.
Radical.
Yeah.
And what's the sort of like as far as like the experience? What's the difference between those two? You know, because they're both very much still, you're still very in a very, like, researched,
mm-hmm.
it's more topical, but it's still a research space. It's still a factual jokes about facts,
right? Yeah. Actually, the guy who, like, headed up the research for Adam Ruins Everything, Clark Caldwell, is actually a field producer on...
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So definitely, like, pulls the same kind of, like, very nerdy comedy people.
Yeah.
Both those shows pull that same kind of person.
So but, what's the comparative of that experience for you?
I mean, other than that, they're pretty different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the process is not that different. It starts with the research, which starts with like a ton of research and reading. Mm-hmm. And we have a much bigger research staff on this show. We have like two fact checkers and two researchers and then a like studio producer who heads up that stuff. Versus on Adam Ruins Everything, it was basically just poor Clark. And so it's not quite as much on the writers to kind of like head up their own research.
Yeah.
But we are still, we still do a ton of reading on our own.
Right.
And yeah, usually the way it works is someone will pitch a story, of like, here's a terrible thing that some state senator in Oklahoma said. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should tear them apart. And then once we get the up or down from our, producer, Joe, and from Sam, then Joe will like assign researchers to pull together a packet of research and most importantly, like good clips of people talking about it on television.
Yeah.
And they'll like make a document for us with all of that and with transcripts of the relevant clips. And we look at that and Joe will like assign a couple of us to write it up.
Yeah.
And we'll write a script for an act. And most of that, some of that, if it's like a long-term thing that we that is not especially time-sensitive, we might be working on that on like Tuesday and Wednesday, and then you know we put it to bed, and maybe it'll be on air this week or in a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually Thursday and Friday is when we are going hard on like what is the big story this week that people are talking about for Monday,
right?
And writing stuff for that.
And in that first meeting, are you one of the people who's pitching that story that becomes the bigger one, or is that like a producer's job to pitch those stories? Is the genesis coming from the writers, or is it coming from producers?
It's coming from everybody.
From everybody.
Yeah, really everybody in the office pitches. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have pitch meetings sometimes, but actually usually it's more like email pitching.
Cool.
Writing up a little blurb.
So it's sort of like the stuff that might have a little bit longer burn at the beginning of the week and then the stuff that's going to be like more super topical heading into the show later in the week.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I think which part of the process do you like the best? Do you like room stuff or do you like working on your own? Do you like writing? Like, because you've done both, right?
I've done both,
A novel?
I think I'm definitely better at writing on my own.
Yeah.
I'm definitely like a writer in... I think I write the best jokes in the privacy of my own head.
Uh-huh.
But room stuff is probably more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's higher energy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like a balance of both.
I think that's probably the ideal, right? Because it's like you get in your own space too much, you can get in your head. But maybe there's also some times where it's like you could use with a little solitude. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A little isolation.
I definitely feel like I can best show what I can do by like...
Doing it.
Yeah. And like writing on my own usually is the best way to do that.
Yeah.
But also like when you're working really hard and like this is not that much the problem with this job because it's like hard work but pretty regular hours. Mm-hmm. But like times in the past when I was freelancing and would go from like one thing to another and write for like 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
That just kind of turns you into a sociopath. Like you can't talk to normal human beings if you do that for too long.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's how I used to feel when I would work from home editing stuff. And I would just be like editing like a documentary all day at my house. And then you'd leave and it would just be like, I just sat in a room watching other people talk to each other.
Yeah.
And now and that's all I did all day. And now it's dark outside. It's the first time I'm leaving. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like human dialogue doesn't quite track anymore.
Yeah.
Like takes you too long to respond for a second.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you do have to like talk to other humans in some capacity at least.
Yeah. And is this this is a great job and a full-time job. Is it like, Are we talking like, do you have a life outside of this right now? Is it like, or is this like the thing for you? You're like back in New York, you're still in that suitcase. Is it like, is there a balance, or is it like you're going at this thing really hard right now?
I mean, it's settling in. Yeah. I think for our first few weeks, everyone was like
going at it.
Really, like this was a huge priority.
Yeah.
But it's starting to like, I think we're starting to get the rhythm of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's always going to be kind of intense, but it's not, you know, we're not there till midnight. Not that often.
Yeah.
Only if there's a debate. Thank God there are not that many more of those.
Only a couple left.
Yeah. I mean, I love them and I hate them. They are so fun to watch, especially the Republican ones.
But for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. they don't make me like feel great about the future of America.
Right.
If they can't even manage to walk out a door.
I know. It's pretty wild. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. I mean, congratulations, man. It's quite a journey. I'm glad that you're back in New York.
Thanks. It's Sorry good to be back.
We haven't been able to,
it's good to
see you, but
UCB.
For good reasons. Yeah. Cool. And I guess, like, for you as well, like, let me just ask this, like, as far as, like, maybe you can't answer this. Where does the path lead for you, hopefully, eventually? Is staff writing, is that going to be hopefully your life for the rest of your life? Are you looking to sort of like?
I mean, I really don't know. I can't.
It depends on what your peer group does and how motivated you feel.
Yeah, I think my path is just to continue to win by every metric that I can try to win by.
So how's that going right now then? You feel like you're on, like, right now, you know, you are a person that people are chasing. You know what I mean?
I think in the last, I don't think I think as much like that as I used to. I was probably much worse about that when I was younger. Sure. I think I'm a little more chill now.
Okay. Cool. Because there's always somebody else, right? It's always like the grass is always greener.
That's the thing.
Isn't
like, it?
It
is.
You progress through.
It's a thing that can motivate you, but also enjoy the journey, man.
Yeah, definitely. Enjoy that suitcase.
Mm-hmm. I have an apartment now. The suitcase is history.
Oh, excellent. So cool. Well, Melinda, thanks for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Great to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
And that will do it for episode number 23 of this podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. Thanks to Melinda for taking the time to sit down and talk to me. Really appreciate it. And I hope that you learned as much from that conversation as I did. Hey guys, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, review us, and give us a rating on iTunes.com/UCB comedy. We would love to hear from you. If you have a question or you have a suggestion or you have a guest suggestion, send us an email, podcasts@UCBcomedy.com. We would love to hear from you. We've got new videos that come out almost every single day on Vimeo and YouTube.com/UCB comedy. Connect with us on social media @UCB comedy. And until next time, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.